Hi, this is Zach Swire, founder of Good Grains, and this is my startup story.
Every wildfire began with a spark. Every superhero has an origin story. And every single startup has a moment that they point to as their beginning. And every founder has a purpose that drove them in the midst of all obstacles. That is the startup story. The startup story would not be possible if it wasn't for the support of our sponsor, MoboCash. Move money like a miracle with MoboCash, the free money app that kicks cash. Download MoboCash app on iTunes or Google Play today, and you'll get your slick new Mobo card in the mail. You are no longer dependent upon digital currency alone, but you'll have a card that allows you to purchase at POS stations, restaurants, buy online, anywhere that you want to use your money. No credit check, no credit impact, quick direct deposit, FDIC insured, and free to register and activate. Support our sponsor, MoboCash. Visit movo.cash or thestartupstory.co/movocash. Before we jump into our episode this week, I want to share a review that was posted on iTunes by Bill from Washington, D.C. area, who gave the Startup Story a 5-star rating and wrote, "I really enjoyed the interview with Jason McCann. The podcast was very well done and enjoyable to listen to. James did an excellent job of moderating and allowing Jason to carry us along his entrepreneurial journey. Totally authentic and down-to-earth interview that kept me interested the entire way." Well, thank you so much, Bill, for the review. And even more so, thank you for listening. These stories shared by our founders are stories that need to be told. Our hope in telling these stories is that everyone listening will get the real, authentic side of entrepreneurship and be better equipped as they continue to build their business or as they start their new venture. So for all listeners, I would love your support. If you have found any value in any of the Startup Story episodes, please leave a review. I'll continue to read one each week, so plug your brand in the review as well. The reviews really do matter when it comes to being discovered in all the various podcast platforms. And giving your business a plug is the least I can do if you take the time out of your day to write a review. Now let's jump into this week's episode. Our guest today is Zach Swire, founder of Good Grains. Good Grains is an e-commerce company that is seeking to improve the quality of everyone's breakfast options. Their food is healthy and unbelievably tasty. I have two kids, ages 13 and 11, and they love the Good Grains granola options. You really do need to check out goodgrains.com. Now, in this episode, we're not going to be discussing grains or breakfast nutrition. We're going to be discussing Zach's entrepreneurial journey. I've known Zach for a few years through various business events. In fact, Zach was building a technology startup at the same time I was venturing to do the same. He reached much higher heights than I did with the tech startup, but both of our startups had the same ending, and that was failure. There are quite a few things you are going to learn in this Startup Story episode, but what I want you to focus on is how Zach endured during some dark and trying times and what it was that kept him going. I want you to pay attention to the support of his family and the role that played in his ability to keep moving forward during those challenging times. And then I hope you'll make note of how he was building GoodGrains.com differently because of what he learned from his past experiences. If you've been around the Startup Story for any length of time, then you know that we always start in the early days of our founders because our upbringing plays a huge role in our entrepreneurial journey. But for Zach, his childhood was a bit disruptive. And for that reason, his entrepreneurial journey began at a very young age.
My first business was probably mowing lawns. And I walked around mowing lawns all over the neighborhood trying to make some money. I think that I always had that. By the time I was 16, I had a Zach's Auto Detailing. That was my second business. And I had a Viper on my cards. And, you know, I'd walk around to all the neighbors, and whether it was a boat or a car or whatever, I'd wash anything and I'd detail it better than anybody. They would call me back because I did a great job. And from there, I decided I was going to work. You know, I wanted to get my family in a different place than where we were. Mm-hmm. And I knew some of the roots of the family. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to take a different path. We had struggled a bit. My parents loved us a ton, but there were things in life that weren't super easy, and sickness and other things. So I wanted a different path, you know, and that meant going to school. When I went to Cal State Fullerton, I paid my way through school. I worked two jobs, worked nights, sometimes three jobs, you know, just to make it through.
So you said you wanted a different path. Are you only child?
No.
So you have siblings. How many siblings?
I have an older brother who's about 10 years older.
Okay.
And then I have two sisters.
So you're one of four.
Yeah.
One of four. So you're, what, are you the second child of that four?
Actually, the third. Older sister is just like a year older, so we were always very close.
Okay. I asked that question because, you know, it's interesting to see the common thread among the roles that children play based upon their birth order.
Yeah.
And so being that third, my assumption is you had a little bit more freedom than your older siblings because parents tend to be a little bit harder on the older ones because they've given up hope come third or fourth. And so,
yeah.
So did that freedom have an impact on your starting up Zach's Detailing and all the other entrepreneurial endeavors?
I think my brother had a big impact on that. My brother, Brian, life at home was a bit unstable. We had moved a lot. We were now in Colorado. I had moved there, finishing 2 years in high school. Great high school, had a lot of fun. But my parents were moving again, or my mom was. My parents had divorced when I was young.
Okay.
And at that time, I was like, I can't do this again. My brother said, hey, I've got a cell phone business. It's called Cell Phone Paging in Brea. Come on out for the summer and work for me. And I'm like, sure, that sounds great. You know, I was 15 at the time.
Yeah.
So I came out, and when I came to California, I was like, whoa, what is this magical place? You know, as a kid. And so I was like, I'm staying. You know, I loved my friends in Colorado, but I'd only been there 2 years and I was having so much fun with him. I got to know him more because he was 10 years older.
Okay.
And he was an entrepreneur, you know, and he had had a few different businesses, and his little cell phone paging company was growing at the time. Pagers were huge at the time.
And what year is that for those listeners no idea what a pager is? I'm 41, so yeah. I'm well aware of what it is.
That was 95.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The sideways pager with the landscape text. Yep. Those are big deals back
totally.
Then.
And he first started, you know, installing the old car phones, the whole kits and everything. Yeah. So he eventually grew that to like 5 locations and kept growing.
Oh, wow.
It. And so I kind of got a bug there for business as well and seeing what he did and enjoyed that and ended up staying out here in California.
So at 15, you said? 15 when you came out here, stayed out here. Your mom was in Colorado. So you finished your high school years up living with your brother?
I did. I finished my senior year here. And then my dad was back in England about a year later.
Okay. Yeah. It sounds like a bit of a disruptive childhood, which plays into the entrepreneurial journey because entrepreneurship can be a bit disruptive to family upbringing. So you're living with your brother. You get a taste for entrepreneurship and your own startups, as well as working with cell phone and paging that your brother had. So now you're finishing up high school, going into college. What did you think your path was?
Yeah, that was tricky. I think at that point, he was an older brother, not a dad. You know, he did a great job and he was awesome letting me stay with him. But that's probably where I could have used a little more guidance. Yeah. You know, I ended up trying to figure that out. I went to Fullerton JC for 1 year. I was trying to figure out how I was going to pay for school. And it was a little bit of a rough path at first. Finally, had some good advice from some family friends after a couple years kind of messing around, like, hey, get your act together. Yeah. You know, it was great because I had always been that type who was super in control and wanted to follow that path, but it got loose. And, you know, and I think that's part of the journey is there's ups and downs. Yeah. And I remember that time it was a down. And yet all of a sudden I made the decision to stop acting on fear. And I signed up and went to school, went to Cal State Fullerton. And it was great. It was the best thing I ever did. I loved going there, had a great experience there, got really involved, worked hard to make it happen. You know, worked night shift at Rainbird, which is a company here in Glendora. I worked at the bank. I worked at Starbucks. I'd work any job I could just to pay the bills and keep it going. I met my awesome wife there as well at the time and got married pretty young. I was still in college. I think I was 22 or something when I got married. Yeah. So pretty crazy. So that was a start of a good path for me and kind of getting out of some uneasy times leading from that period of high school on.
So now you're in college. You met your wife. You got married while you were still in school. You are no longer able to make decisions without consideration of another at this point. So what were you going to school for and what did you end up doing out of college?
Actually, in school pretty quickly, I took a class because it was, you know, you had to take some different electives and marketing was one of those where I was like, oh, this sounds interesting, you know? And so I took this marketing class with a professor named Tom Boyd, who I think eventually went on to be at like Kaplan in Florida or something as a dean there. Super great professor who got me so excited about marketing. I remember my first marketing plan was on a VW microbus and I wrote this massive report and I know we had a team, but I kind of took control and I was like, this is amazing. I love doing this. You know, I can be creative and yet I can have all these ideas and I can be visual and, you know, all the different things I love about advertising and marketing and bringing things together for a better solution, you know? And so I loved it. And he loved it. I got like an A+ on the report.
That's
awesome. I was like, man, this is awesome. So at that point, I chose marketing as my path and just dug in. And I ended up had another friend, James Berry, who is president of the AMA and got me involved there. And so I got involved in the American Marketing Association on campus. At first was tough because, you know, I was dating Gwen and my wife and, you know, I was working all these jobs. But what was cool is she was a little bit older. So she was getting her speech pathology degree and finishing her master's. And so at that time, she actually went to work. And then I was able to stop that last year and really plug in on campus, work on campus, and get really involved. So that was a pretty awesome time that started making some great connections and really let me kind of get involved in school in a different way.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So marketing is the degree you're going for. I would assume that through the college journey, the marketing major is positioned as one to be plugged into an organization, not from an entrepreneurial perspective. So am I safe to assume that as you were wrapping up college, your thought was, where am I going to work?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. You know, I had worked a number of jobs, so I thought, well, where could I go? But I had a family mentor, kind of friend of mine through my wife, this guy Wolf, who near the end of school, just kind of one day called me and he's like, hey, I got this trade show going on. Can you meet me down here? And I'm like, all right. I didn't know what was going on, but I remember he's like, dress nice and come. So I put on a suit and I went down to this trade show. Didn't really know. I knew what a trade show was, kind of, you know, but you're in school and you're trying to figure all this out. Yep. So I showed up and he introduced me to a guy he was investing in, Yansong, who had invented this like scalpel blade changer device for some company he was investing in.
Okay.
Some sort of new OSHA regulated thing.
And, okay.
And he's like, oh, you know, I could use some help here. And so I said, okay, well, he offered me a job. So I'm like, well, I haven't even finished school. I haven't even started looking. But I was like, well, great. I guess I have a job. So I said, I'm like, what's your title? Well, you can figure that out. So I became a sales and marketing manager for this new startup that he was investing in. And they were in the unique challenges of getting something launched. You know? So it was really that first experience of, okay, well, very entrepreneurial job was, let's take this small startup and see what we can do with it. And I could go on about that story, but a year and a half, it was great experience. You know, went out, sold like 400 of these units across the country, set up distributors, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew what I was doing, I guess enough, but it was pretty much like, just go have fun.
It was the Wild West, right?
So I went out and did a lot of things well, actually. I look back and I'm like, I didn't even know what I was doing, but I found the right channels. Yeah. I got them set up and got it going.
So your first gig out of college was with a startup.
Yeah.
So in just our short time in hearing your story with your entrepreneurial childhood, the independence of living with your brother versus a parent, your college journey in marketing, your first gig being a startup, it's almost as if entrepreneurship was a foregone conclusion for what your life's journey was going to be. But at that time, did you have any inkling that that was going to be the case?
I don't know. I mean, I think there's always things that kind of pull on you and things where you feel more comfortable. I'd also done a lot of service business, waited tables, and I wanted to do things where I could optimize my time and make money and be able to get back and enjoy life and try to balance work and life. You know? So it's always been kind of a facet of life, so which has drawn me towards entrepreneurship. And I think as I got into that, I immediately saw a love for it. You know, so when I was there, I was like, wow, this is amazing. I can solve a problem. Like they have a problem. And that was me. Like I always grew up like always with the solution. Somebody have a problem, you know, just sometimes hard in your marriage, but my wife knows me now. So now I know when to kind of just bite my tongue and be like, all right, I don't have to solve this one. But it's great for business where a lot of people just don't dig deeper.
Yeah.
And I think the older I get and the more I look at problems in life or the way companies handle things, a lot of times it's just there because one, it's either hard to solve or they haven't really tried or they're just sitting on it because we're so busy with all the stuff that we do, we're afraid to get in and actually find a solution for something. Yeah. So later on, as we get into the story and I tell you about the agency I ran, that was actually our mantra is we solve problems because I found pretty quickly that's what I love doing.
That is awesome. So what was your next step after the startup? What happened to the startup? And then what was your next step?
So that was an interesting dynamic and culture. So that was a culture I didn't fit in. I thought I did, but very nice guy.
Why didn't you fit in?
He was a Chinese scholar
and
had his PhD. I didn't have respect because I didn't have my master's. Yeah. I was actually in school to get my master's at the time. I went back to Cal State Fullerton. And at that time, I realized, you know, I'd met a mentor who was actually a mentor for our AMA who said, hey, I got an agency in Costa Mesa. Would you consider working there? So I ended up moving over to that agency and became a director of marketing, which for me, I'm thinking like, I just got out of school. Wait, I was a sales and marketing manager. Now I'm a director of marketing. This is pretty sweet. You know, so I moved down there.
This is why people go to college.
And everything was going up. It looked great. So I moved over there. Great small team. Did really great work. Was there for about a year and a half. And it wasn't long. Like now a year and a half goes by so fast. But I was moving fast at that age. I was like, oh, I got to grow. I got to get something done, you know? And it was like, I just have to get this done. I have to move. And then I talked to him. I was driving 3 to 4 hours a day.
Why were you driving 3 hours each day?
So I was driving 3 to 4 hours each day because I live in a town called Glendora, which is way across from Costa Mesa. So it doesn't look that far on a map, but in LA traffic is just
nuts.
Forever.
It's forever.
Know? And sometimes it'd be 4 hours, you know, I did the math. I'd be in my head, you know, just driving everybody nuts, calling because I couldn't stand sitting in the car for 4 hours a day.
Yeah. For those listeners that don't understand what LA traffic is like, think about the road trips you go on, whether it be yourself or the loved one or the family. You go about 2 or 3 hours away, and that's a road trip. That's a vacation. That's what a Southern California commuters go through all the time, where we begin to think about, where could I have gone now that I'm on my third hour of traffic?
Totally. Yeah, or my buddy who was working at UCLA and lives here in Glendora, and we calculated, and it was like, well, you're actually driving like an extra 6 weeks a year worth of paid time.
It's so painful.
Yeah. You do the math, you're like, this is dumb.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's part of the thing too. And talking with the guy who owned that company, he had been burned from some past partners. Mm-hmm. He didn't want a partner. And I was young. Okay. And I can't blame him. So we decided to part ways. And I decided at that point, hey, we're young. I didn't have kids yet. I'm going to do my own agency.
So how old were you at this time?
In my early 20s, somewhere in there. Yeah.
So your early 20s, 4 years out of college. Between the startup and this firm, and you're jumping into your own thing.
Yeah. And it was, what was cool about that is, again, I think at that age, you don't realize what you don't know yet.
Yes.
I was able to just dive in. And within the first 6 months, I remember picking up this great project with a couple different companies. One was a cable system out in Bakersfield, Bright House. And I ended up doing this whole holiday campaign for them, wrote the scripts, the radio, did the direct mail. Took on everything because I was going to make it better.
That's awesome.
And I did. And, you know, I was proud of myself.
Yeah.
And it was me and some freelancers. And I was in a bedroom. It was where I used to make homebrew at home. Like, it was our homebrew bedroom, which we were in our first house and, you know, no kids. So we had that luxury of you do whatever you want with these spare rooms, which then became the office for the start of Swire Marketing, which is what we called it at first. Later, it just became Swire and it was our agency. But in that first stretch, it was just me and freelancers. I had goals of, I got to grow this or we'll see what happens. And that went for about a year and a half. But the next stage of life is where the kids come in. Mm-hmm. It's now 2007, January. My wife and I have been trying to have kids for 4 years. The stress from that, if you've been in a relationship where that's hard, that lays on just an incredible stress.
Yeah.
You know, where every party you go to, every other woman's now pregnant and your wife is just falling apart because she's, it's really stressful. And then all of a sudden in January, we find out of 2007, my wife's pregnant. And then at the end of the month, we go for our appointment. And at that point, I'm at the same time, I'm looking at spaces and I'm thinking, well, it's time to grow this thing out of a bedroom. Maybe I should look at an office and actually hire some people. You know, I'm doing pretty good. I'm now actually starting to pay myself. And I think one thing entrepreneurs don't realize is you got to pay the bills first.
Yeah.
You know, I know sometimes they say, oh, you got to pay yourself first. Well, yeah, if the business makes money enough to do that.
Yes.
And getting it going, I didn't pay myself that much the first year. I think it was like $35,000, which was a huge drop from what I was making as a director of marketing before. But I thought, well, I'm going to give this time. We'll see what happens. I got to build up. And I wanted to reinvest in the company. Yeah. So I was putting more back into it. And I remember the time when even just costs like buying a server or buying Macs, because I love Macs. So we, I remember our first one was $11,000, you know, so that money I was making, that was one computer for one graphic artist, you know, so.
And I love that listeners right now are here. Some young of our business school listeners are hearing an $11,000 Mac. They're like, wait, what?
1 terabyte drive. And that was amazing at the time.
Oh, it is amazing how commoditized storage is now.
Yeah, it's nuts. So this is the start of what was the agency going from, am I going to close the doors and go get a job or am I going to really hone in and make this happen? Well, we go to the appointment for my wife's follow-up.
January, 2 years after you started the agency.
I think it's around January 30th, 2007. And they do the little scan, you know, I forgot what you call that thing. They scan and
ultrasound.
The ultrasound. There you go. Thank you. And then I'm looking at the monitor and I'm counting and I'm looking and I see 1 dot, 2 dots, 3 dots. And so I look at the nurse and I'm like, 1, 2, 3, what is that? And she's like, are you kidding? Kind of snotty. And I was like, she's like, you're having three. And I'm like,
oh my goodness.
I think I didn't register. And I look at my wife and all of a sudden, I think it clicked for her first. Cause all of a sudden I saw tears starting to like pour down her face. And then she says, you're having triplets. Oh, wow. The world just shifted, you know? So at that point it was like, go home, figure out what you're actually doing for work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at the time, I don't know. I've got an amazing wife. She was like, okay with the idea of let's see if this business will really fly. We moved into an office and also talked again to our mentor friend who we're still working with today. and got great advice there and support from him. And it enabled us to open this first office in a little retail center. And we hired within the first year, I think we're up to 7 employees and started growing from there. I mean, I could go on and on about all the businesses. There's not enough time in this conversation. But what was cool is over the next few years, it was just steady growth up. We kept doing the right things. We kept growing in that market, owning our space. Mm-hmm. And it was fun. That eventually grew to have a couple different offices. And we had about 33 employees and across the country in different offices and doing great work. And we were this kind of art and science approach to marketing because we had to be to solve problems. Yeah, so it wasn't just about great creative, but we came in with our teams to really solve the problems. We wanted to prove that our marketing worked better than anybody else's. If you're doing direct mail, we were better. We were one of the first small agencies in the country. We did like the first Cox corporate campaign for all their locations across the country when they had like 23 locations mm-hmm. before they started consolidating. And we did some great campaigns. We did stuff with HBO and Showtime where we watched shot fight nights in Vegas, and we made cool stuff that plugged into early Facebook that would then drive those users over so we could capture their emails. So eventually what did happen when you lost all those contacts because you didn't own them, they actually did because we were thinking about that ahead of time. So we were doing really cool things. We didn't even know we were going to add value because we were really thinking about their business and how to solve their major problems, which is they were competing against, you know, DirecTV and these bigger players. We had to get smarter. So we worked a lot in communications in that agency. We did some other things in education, and that was all great. And it was great up until about 2011-12.
So let me pause there real quick. So Swire Marketing is not your current venture, just for spoiler alert for listeners.
Yep.
So Swire Marketing existed for 4 or 5 years?
It actually started 2005.
Okay.
And it went to around 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So about 7 years then. So within the 7 years, a lot happened.
Yep.
You had triplets,
yep.
which I would assume is a magnitude greater of complexity than just having a kid. And so with that, what was that entrepreneurial journey like for you the moment you found out you had 3 and your wife was super supportive? But for you, what was that mental thought process like for you where you're thinking, okay, I can go get a high paying job somewhere and take care of my family well? I just finally am breaking $35,000 a year in this venture. But you just told us also that at the end of your first year, you had 7 employees. So something switched for you mentally on drive, focus. Like, what happened that year for you?
It's called, you're gonna be a dad, right? Like, I had 3 more lives to think about.
Yeah.
At that point, it was like, okay, you really gotta, and it's not that it wasn't serious before, but I don't think when you're young that you realize how much time you actually do have in the day. And especially as you get older and you really seriously don't have any time, how much time I actually wasted probably when I was younger.
Yeah.
It's not all wasted. I mean, I do believe in that balance, but something kicked in, you know, and I think it was that drive just to know, hey, I got to take care of my family or I do have to do something else. But I had already seen the taste of LA and I'd seen the taste of a job where I could be commuting 3 to 4 hours a day. And I'm also a very plugged in dad, you know, so I didn't want to be that dad that's not around, that couldn't be with my kids, that couldn't go to their games, that couldn't coach soccer as I've done for years. I wanted to be that. And I thought, you know what, being an entrepreneur will allow me to do that. And of course, the downside is all the other stuff that comes on with it, you know, that it never ends, that you take it home every day, the stress with your family, the ups and the downs. I don't think I could trade it. I'm just wired for it.
Yeah.
Not that I wouldn't go get a job if I had to, you know, I'll take care of my family first, but I do love it. And it's something that drives me. And so I guess in that first year, something did click.
Yeah.
It was more of a time sensitivity to know, oh yeah, I got to make this happen now. Mm-hmm. So instead of being like, well, we should do this when, it became, well, let's just get this going now.
Yeah.
Things like, well, we got to get this client. Well, how do you get that client? I don't know, I pick up the phone. I mean, I've seen so many people ask about like, well, how do I get this business? I've been emailing and I set up these campaigns and I did all this stuff. I don't know. Did you call them? Did you walk in the door? Did you ask somebody?
Yes.
You know, sometimes it's really not that hard. But we're also afraid of actually just that personal communication and actually trying to get in there and make it happen. That first year was really, okay, we're making this happen.
That is awesome. I love that. So 2012 comes along. What happened in 2012?
Yeah, so in 2012, it was a strange journey from the agency kind of getting out of what we did best and starting to do some different things. And one of those was a project with an advisor who had worked with some folks in Hawaii. So we came up with this concept of a show called Passport Hawaii. And so we flew to Hawaii. We even met with like people at the government there. And we needed a host for the show. So I thought of a friend that was kind of more of an acquaintance at the time, Brian Clay, who had won the gold medal at the decathlon and the silver prior to that. I thought, well, he'd be a good host. You know, he's a good looking guy. He was from Hawaii. And at the time we had some other connections and picked up like an old Miss America or somebody like that. So we start putting together the show. And then we found out in Hawaii, well, if you're not from Hawaii, they don't really like working with you. So we're like, all right, well, then we established an office there so we could actually be from Hawaii.
Yeah.
And that also didn't go so well. And they kind of took over production control. It was one of the guys there had worked on the local news and they put together the first episode and it looked like some bad remake of Saved by the Bell intro or something. You know, it's a few hundred thousand dollars in and a few trips to Hawaii later, we were like, oh man. What are we doing? This was a wreck. It was a big train wreck.
Yeah.
And we backed out of the project at that time. And
what was the purpose of the show though? Because you were in a marketing advertising firm. So how did that concept even come into your focus?
I think as an agency, you know, we were exploring how do we further diversify into other fun ideas that, because at the time things were going well. So we're like, all right, well, this is cool. Let's not just put all our eggs in the basket of doing marketing communications and plans and all the stuff we were doing. We were doing TV spots. We're doing everything by then.
Okay.
You know, and at the time I thought, well, let's explore a little deeper.
Okay.
Maybe we launch this show. So we found some people who were interested and we put it together. It was just kind of a pet project. But there in Hawaii, I woke up one morning kind of realizing like, I don't know, I had some dreams about this crazy concept and went on a run and came back and wrote down these ideas and which then spawned the next business, which was E-Good. That's a tough one. Some very high highs and some very low lows in terms of my business life. And also the reason that we shut down the agency. So
let's talk about that.
Yeah.
What was E-Good? What was its growth? And why did it ultimately lead to you shutting down Swire?
So I came back from Hawaii and we jumped right into business as usual with the agency. And at that time, things were going great. You know, we had our 30 plus employees. We had a tiny little office on Madison and we had our analytics team in Washington. We had now launched this thing in Hawaii. We're now trying to figure out how to close it down. But then the spark of an idea was there. So I hired an intern and put her on a pet project in the back office and said, here, just start exploring this concept. And it was the idea of how do we integrate something that matters into our business that was tired of just selling, teaching people how to use a DVR versus HTV at the time. And I was like, I got to do more. I want to do something that matters. My kids are getting older. And I thought, well, what am I going to lend versus just selling more cable subscriptions, you know? And so we started looking into this concept of how can we transactionally tie in support to nonprofits that we care about or groups in our community that need support and awareness. And we thought, well, we could do that. We could do that through technology. Plus, we also saw service being kind of the theme of how do we do better customer service or how do we take care of our customers better? We thought, well, we can provide the tools for that. So we started mapping out this concept of how can we connect our shoppers and community with businesses that actually care about causes with those causes in kind of this real-time environment. So we were all about connecting communities, companies, and causes for this greater good. And we thought, well, let's build kind of this platform that would do that. Not just a simple solution, but one that actually fully solved it, which was partly a good idea, partly a really bad idea.
Yeah.
Because building a huge platform right out the gate versus some sort of MVP product that we could have tested a piece of it probably would have been a better approach in hindsight. Yeah. But we took on the investment and went after the big idea and pretty quickly turned our back room into an area where, you know, we had like 12 developers and we were going gung-ho on getting this thing launched.
Yeah.
And we started building out the technology behind it and almost a Facebook type system with social profiles and app integration and very deep and you know, real-time payments. And again, we took on the world. I was young. I thought, I can do this.
Yeah.
Build whatever I want. And we did. And it was pretty cool. And so when we first launched it, it was a iPad app in a, like say your local coffee shop, and it would say this business is supporting this local cause, for instance, like the Glendora Ed Foundation. And every time you make a purchase, this amount goes back to the group. So instead of just being loyalty for loyalty's sake, you would check in, a purchase would give back. You would get notified on your app how much is given. It even had like leaderboards. You could see all the difference that you're making. You could invite people to join you. You'd see that support. And we found, hey, it worked. And if people didn't want to check in, we then phase of that, we ended up rolling in the actual loyalty tracking. And on the backside, if you're the cashier, we made a great iPad app that then brought up your face, your likes, your favorite drinks, all the information that you could give better customer service. You could greet them by name when they walked in.
Yeah.
They walked in and their app was on. It'd pop up in a queue on the screen so you could see who was in your shop. You know, so we were thinking of all the problems that we could solve. And we wanted to make sure that that barista could know your favorite drink, remember who you are, have those cues. And then also we did more of a Tony Hsieh style of loyalty, which was this surprise moment where instead of having to make people remember to bring a punch card, we made it all digital and we got to surprise you when you were due, whether you remembered or not. So we really made that kind of a fun process and thinking through that whole transactional relationship, tying in support, but helping the business grow, better data on their customers, the actual experience of standing there with the customers, how they could solve that. I could go on and on. There were a lot of things that we were trying to do really well, which also meant a lot of budget, a lot of time, a lot of investment. Yeah. But we took our first pass at that to TechCrunch in San Francisco. And we thought, well, let's see. Let's see what people think. You know, we had a few businesses going. We were working with Golden Spoon, trying to roll it out in locations. We were starting to expand it. We were getting great results. We were seeing like a Golden Spoon location who said, you know, we hardly get people to do punch cards anymore. We came in and we had like 80% of customers would actually check in on our system.
Wow.
Because they know it supported a local cause. And we did a little three-tier approach where once they said no, then, oh, but it does actually also sign up for your loyalty. So we track that for you. And then to say yes. Or if they didn't, oh, we'll give you free toppings. They could get 80% of people to check in every time.
That's incredible.
That was incredible. That is so incredible. We're like, we can scale this thing. Let's get this going. So we took it to TechCrunch. We had our little pitch booth. It was partner Sven and I. And we sat out there among 300 other startups. And we pitched all day long till we could barely talk anymore. And then I won't forget when all of a sudden somebody comes up and taps me on the shoulder. And it was one of the lead guys there who said, hey, you guys got audience choice. Sweet. So we want audience choice. So we didn't know what that meant necessarily, but he's like, come on with me. And he's like, okay, you got half an hour and you're going to be on stage. And so unfortunately it was half an hour. We had no thought that we would actually be up there. So we had a deck, but I played the deck for the guy and he's like, he was some former like senior guy from AOL or whatever. And he's like, Zach, just tell your story. Don't read the deck. And that was good advice. It also caused us to fumble a little bit when we got up there, but we had a lot of fun. We got to go up and share our story. And after that, we got a lot of attention, you know, and it was maybe a little too early because the product wasn't fully dialed in at the time, but it was good that we got to talk to other VCs. And at that point we were looking at how do we raise more money? So then with kids in, at home and a business that we're really needed to be in, the focus was now just on kind of traveling around, going to New York, going to San Diego, pitching, trying to raise more funds. Versus actually just honing in on the product.
Yeah.
In retrospect, I should have just sat and made sure that product was completely dialed in. We should have just kept growing it, getting more and more customers versus getting caught up in this hype of, let's go raise more funds. Let's go get more awareness. Mm-hmm. No, we had a great product. I ended up shutting it down because we ended up burning through all the funds. And then I spent another year and a half of my life working for free for the company and trying to make it work and burning through our personal savings, trying to make that work because I believed in it so much.
How long did you work on eGood?
4 years.
So in a four-year span, though, you essentially lost two companies.
Yeah. Early on, when eGood was really looking to take off, we talked to VCs who said, you can't be an owner of this and an owner of that. You can't be so divided. You need to have your attention here if you're going to go after this. And it was an interesting time because I think a lot of things were shifting. The economy was not in a good place. Even the cable systems were doing weird things where all of a sudden, like I said, with Cox, 23 different cable systems became like eight. They were consolidating services and printing. And, you know, so we were losing some of the things that we had and kind of naturally came together. So we decided to shut that down. We held on to a couple clients, even under eGood, kind of that were old agency clients and still did the work for about another year and a half.
Do you now, looking back, agree with that VC who said you can't do both?
No, not necessarily.
And I ask that because there are listeners that are probably thinking that, why can't you do both? I can do both.
It depends on the person. And really, I think if you could actually launch something where you really, truly focus in on the MVP and you actually test it out and you get traction and you do it the right way, then yeah, I think you could. The problem was we were trying to go in full speed ahead with all this investment. And I couldn't because at that point I needed to be 24/7 on this new product, this new company, because we would come in and work till 2 a.m. and we'd had a team of people. I remember going to Costco and buying tons of snacks, laying them out on the table. And we've got pictures of the whole team up at like 2 a.m. celebrating as we'd launch something new. It was a fun time.
Yeah.
And that was just, it was impossible, you know? So they were right from that standpoint.
From an outside perspective, your agency was really a great complement to your startup in the aspect that your job was to solve problems and acquire customers, getting branding and messaging. So it really, from the outside perspective, feels like a good fit.
Yeah, I think it could have worked. It's probably one of those things I just got a little too excited about what we were currently doing. And at the same time, yeah, money hasn't been at the forefront of the reason why I do things. Mm-hmm. For that, it was really, I wanted to do something that mattered. But I also wanted to find more of that financial security too.
Yeah.
You know, obviously coming from a background and kind of the ups and downs of our childhood and how that went, I wanted to make sure I set a different path.
Yeah.
And so that was also exciting, seeing that, hey, this thing could actually take off and we could be creating something pretty huge. I wanted to put everything I had into it.
Yeah.
And not for the money, but to make it work, to really give it every chance it could.
So before we talk about the closing of eGood, I do believe we have listeners out there that have a tremendous amount of drive and enthusiasm to build their dream, multiple businesses, different revenue streams, income streams for themselves. We're 3 years removed from eGood. What do you say to younger Zach in 2011 as you're contemplating eGood and all the success that Zwire's having? What do you say to younger Zach?
I would tell younger Zach, there's some great ideas in there. Make one of them stick and work on a small scale. Get a number of businesses using it really well. Keep doing what you're doing as your full-time job. Run this on the side until it's got enough traction and really can take over. And then start scaling it as it gets that. Because there were some pieces that even today I still think are fantastic and way better than what most people are doing. But we tried a little too hard, too fast. And we had met with the guy who was on our advisory board who had told us he was an investor in Facebook and Living Social. Mm. And he's just like, Zach, hey, you probably need like $50 million to start scaling this. And wow. At that point, I've been on the road and I'm doing all this stuff away from my kids. And I'm like, I don't want to go on pitches to go raise as much money. My heart was starting to fall out of it at that time. We had so many kind of stumbling points. And I was like, you know what? Maybe we just went about this all wrong. And I think the same thing can be done without having to go to VCs and raise the money. I think when you build a good business with a good product, the hard part is you get ahead of yourself. Because I'm a guy who wants to solve the problem now. I want to solve it fast.
Yeah.
And that's been one of the challenges with where we're at today. But I'm learning from that. And I could say, I think I've done some things better this time around.
Yeah.
And in that transition time, so you said, well, what happened after eGood was done?
Yeah. It's been 3 years.
Right.
So what was the first year like?
Well, I'll never forget the first moment when you paste that page up that then replaces your website with we're gone and we're shutting down. And it's such a devastating moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can just feel it just thinking about it because it's all that energy, heart, blood, sweat, and tears that you put into creating something that you think will be great for people, great for your customers, great for community, like all the reasons why we did this.
Great for your family.
For my family. So tough. And it actually took me a little while. There were a few months thereafter where I was just kind of at a loss. I was like, what do I do?
Yeah.
How do I go from here? What do I do next? And I thought, well, I can consult. And at the same time, we're always looking at ideas. We took our old ad agency office, which is a cool two-story building. It used to be this mall tool company from the 50s in Glendora. It's an old two-story gray building. We turned it into co-working.
Okay.
So we called it Kicks on 66 because we're on Route 66. And I looked at a map and it was pretty simple. I'm like, well, there's co-working here, but there's this huge circle in like the LA region within like a 40, 50 mile radius with like no co-working. I mean, even still today, a lot of people know what co-working is, but I'm like, come on, there's gotta be people who are interested. So we launched it. In a few months, we were nearly full. I looked at that being another business and thought, well, I'm not a real estate guy. I'm not into construction. Yeah. And there were a lot of things I knew I didn't know. And so we talked to our investor friend who, you know, knew a guy who was doing co-working, and Union Co-work ended up coming in and buying the building and put in a great location there. And so they're continuing to expand. They're doing great things. I decided, let me consult. Let me at least kind of find where I want to be. And in that co-working space, we met some folks from a group called Heavenly Treasures. I just loved their mission and what they were doing. And it was kind of a small family run nonprofit. And they were committed that everything they sold, 100% was going back to these artisans. So they fundraised and would figure out how to do their operations locally so that they could help people in 20 countries around the world. I think they had thousands of artisans. And I thought, well, I got to see how this works. Mm-hmm. So they actually took me on a trip to Africa with a friend of mine, and he ended up doing the videography for the trip. And it was just a really life-changing, amazing experience. You know, we all see the stories. We created eGood because we wanted to help groups that were supporting third world conditions, and whether it's water or whether it's, you know, any sort of nonprofit that's important to you, whether it's local or global, that's why we created eGood, because there were a lot that needed awareness and support. But actually getting in it yourself and walking in the streets and going through the slums and going to help people personally was such a life-changing moment, you know? And so I got to go there, spend, you know, a week with them, got to tour just some of the worst conditions I've ever seen and see people who are living in ditches and filth. Mm-hmm. And it's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
The hard part was seeing that some people were just satisfied with that because it was better than where they were before.
Yeah, yeah.
And what was so cool to see with this group is they understood that every single person there had to have some sort of personal hope for something greater for that to change. Sometimes that support that we give and we just throw dollars at or just throw food their way isn't actually helping. That it had to be that personal relationship of coming in and saying, no, I believe in you.
Yeah,
there's actually a greater hope here that you can do something for you and your family. And that's what spawns the change. And it's not just throwing, you know, of course they need the resources and the money, but there's people who won't even go take that because they've just given up. And sitting in a room that's barely as big as this table with a lady who is doing sewing for this group, who this was her whole house. And then right out in front of her house was a ditch with where waste from all the other slum houses were.
Wow.
Like you imagine, like just the conditions were just so horrible. And that kind of sat with me for a few months as I came back and I thought, well, shoot, what do I do with this now?
How long after shutting down E-Good was that trip?
It was within that first 6 months, I'd say after.
You shut down E-Good. Obviously, there's a conversation to be had with your wife. I don't know if she knew the state of things prior to shutting down E-Good. I don't know if that was, if it was a shock to her when you mentioned closing it down. What was the conversation with your wife in those 6 months? And then how did your trip shift your perspective from the 2 weeks before you were on that trip?
There was so much going on at the time. It was such a crazy time in life. Obviously, the kids are getting older. I'm always the type who's there, like I said, being personally there and also for the business. So whether it was coaching soccer, being on the board of the local Ed Foundation, being on the board at Cal State Fullerton, I had to start backing out of some things because I was doing so much. And then I was trying to now make this work. Part of that discussion was, you know, she was home for 7 years. With the kids, and we were able to do that, which was great. In Southern California is not an easy task. And that was a huge blessing for our family that we were able to have her home when the kids, especially with triplets.
Yes.
So part of that was her going back to work, that if we were going to make this go and we were going to invest and try to not just take investor dollars, but continue to invest ourselves and our dollars and time and energy into growing this. And she was behind it. She believed in it too. And so she was there every step of the way, all the way to the end. We're always very open on business and life. I know people who are like, no, you don't tell your wife about your finances or you don't, it's crazy. I don't know what they're talking about. You know, we're partners in this and we share everything. And I can't even imagine not going there or being there or having her part of that discussion and decision. Yeah. So yeah, that's absolutely critical to me. I think it's completely insane to do anything otherwise and disrespectful.
Yeah, agreed. So obviously there's a healing process in those 6 months though. So did that trip play a role in your healing?
You know, it really did. I think because it opened my eyes up to just something so much greater that I'd never set out to just do this for myself or my family, but I wanted to know that I was doing it for a greater purpose. And so that time it really started to make me think, well, what am I doing? You know, and also at the same time, we were involved in a church that was having trouble and kind of going through the split. And I had even backed out of being on a board there where I was helping out. And so everything was kind of at a phase where I'm like, maybe I just need to stop doing so much and try to hone in on a couple things. But then all of a sudden the path shifted again. And it was like, a few friends and this pastor were launching a new church. And so then entrepreneurially, I got asked to come in and help them with that. And then that became a thing, almost an extra 30 hours a week on top of consulting and other work I was doing for the next 6 months until we were doing well enough to hire a staff, which is not the thing I would have taken on at the time. You know, when you're like, I need to get more than just consulting with a few different companies and get a full-time job or start something up. Or, and I've got a wife at home who's now saying, maybe it's time that you're not doing your own thing anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so you also have that pressure coming in saying like, I think you got to hang up the hat on the entrepreneurial thing. Like you did well. You also didn't do so well in the last time. And I don't know if we can do this as a family again.
And it's hard to argue with her at that point, right?
Right.
I mean, it's the thought goes through your mind like, well, there might be some validity to what you're thinking because.
Absolutely. There's a lot of self-doubt in that too. And it's really tough. I think that's the hardest part is waking up in the morning and being ready to turn that key when now you start to question yourself. Because before that, I would always solve the problem. I would work hard and I would get it done. And this was the first time in life where, I wasn't solving the problem, but I wasn't giving it any less effort. Actually, I was giving it way more and it just wasn't working.
Yeah.
But there's no guarantee. I think that's one of the lessons is just because you put in the work and the effort doesn't mean it's going to work.
Yeah. You can't control both sides of the equation. You can control the input. You have zero control of the output.
Absolutely. At that time, I ended up also consulting with another friend who asked me to come over and help. And it was a company called Sevenly. I'd been following them. They were really cool out of Fullerton and they did t-shirts and helped nonprofits. So it was very fitting with all the stuff we were doing. And it's where I ended up meeting Luke, who's in the office right here, and ended up bringing him on to join us with Good Grains because I met him over there and he was doing an amazing job, almost kind of running the show over there. So it was cool being a part of that company for a while. It was a short stint to come in and help them with some changes they needed to make. And at that point, as I started going out of that consulting phase, it was a sit down with the guy who originally brought me on at my first job out of college, who's still a family friend, who said, hey, you know, 7 or 8 years ago in the agency, we were having a late night discussion one time about cereal and talking about companies like Dollar Shave Club, who had just launched at the time, or Harry's. He's like, do you still like those ideas that you were sharing with me about like getting this online, or nobody sells cereal online like this? You know, what do you think? Would people buy it at home? I said, well, maybe. And he also had some thoughts on some fundraising components and being dads and coaching soccer and doing all that stuff. We thought, well, yeah, fundraising kind of sucks. Like, let's make it better. At that time, he's like, why don't you give it a shot? Let's see. I got a cereal company. Let's talk. Let's sit down. Why don't you come up with some ideas? So I took the next month or two to really dig into that and decided, well, maybe there's something here.
That's the origin story of Good Grains.
Yeah.
So for our listeners, what is Good Grains?
Good Grains is an online cereal company at the start. Okay. That's kind of where we started, was an online cereal company with a fundraising component. Today, that's shifted. We're all about starting your day better. What we found is selling cereal online is super tricky. One of the biggest things is Amazon and shipping.
Yes.
You know, and so I can go in depth about Amazon and shipping and why that matters. But also, I wanted to solve my own problem, which is I'm a busy dad, busy professional. If I can't get something healthier, not end up with diabetes, because there are 30 million diabetics in the country and 60 million pre-diabetics. And by another 20 years, it's going to be way higher, even doubled, because we're on a horrible track from the foods that we're eating. I thought, well, maybe I can be part of that solution. That ties in the social impact. We can do something better. We have a cereal company at our disposal. Let's get that going. But the story is, we started it kind of wrong. Mm. The way we started it wrong was, there's an idea and there's a company to partner with. And one of the first meetings was, let's go sit down in a boardroom and discuss, what do we need to do? I came to the table with a bunch of ideas of, these are the products, these are the things that we need to kind of get this going. And the response was, well, these are the products that we have. This is kind of what you get. Mm. And in retrospect, I probably should have said, you know, with my marketing and branding expertise and kind of where I was at, I looked at them and I thought, whoa, I would not buy that off the 99 cent store shelf. You know, that looks horrible. And I told them so. But they had some good thoughts in terms of, well, fundraising, the product packaging and stuff doesn't matter as much. Why don't we hone in and focus there first? And you can run with that and see how it goes. So as a type to solve problems, I took on the challenge, which was really a downfall for me, because I'm like, I can solve any challenge. So I thought, let me just take what they have, even though I know it's not right. And I went out for the next 6 months saying, let's launch the fundraising arm of Good Grains, and we'll focus in there and we'll get to the retail side later. So we started there, basically made a fundraising flyer, drove all over California going to PTA meetings. And I thought, I'm going to roll up my sleeves. I'm not going to go ask for a ton of money. I'm not going to invest crazy. I'm going to do it the other way this time. Yeah. And I just got in the car and went. And I went everywhere. And I set up tables and I loaded the car. I did it all myself. You know, and this is going from a place where I kind of got a little bit used to going into my office, which was upstairs, and looking out and being able to call team members. And I had account directors and account managers and interns. And, you know, I'd go talk at schools about how to set up these great teams. And, oh no, this is Zach doing it all.
Yeah.
And it was a complete mind shift getting back to the start of Good Grains again, because it was a reality set that I was always the type who'd take the trash out. I was never afraid of that. But it's a lot different story when you're doing everything again and you've now started over this entrepreneurial journey.
Thinking back to that moment, do you remember reflecting back on Swire and eGood, thinking, I am going to do this different? Or was it just now ingrained in you and a part of you, all the learnings from your past experiences, that it was a new Zach starting a new venture?
Both. I think some of that I would never do again, because it was so painful.
Yeah.
And then some of that I really, and we still today, we, you know, we do our daily meeting stand-ups in the morning, and some things that we've carried across that from the agency or before that we just know that work.
Yeah.
So like, we have our 5-minute stand-up, we have our KPI docs in our meetings, and some of those things that we know that drive the business forward are now in there. The ones that we found that were a waste of time are definitely not there. Yeah. But then some of the harder ones are more of like how you make decisions, or those bigger decisions, and how fast we move, or who we partner with, or will we take the risk to invest in this? Those are the harder ones. Those are a little softer. So we really have to think back about what happened the last time I tried something like that. Yeah. So after a few months of being on the road and trying to get this going, what was great is everybody loved it. I had the best looking cute little booth with, like, you know, the craft tablecloth and boxes and packaging. And I even realized quickly, you know what, although I can't change their packaging, I made these cool little Kraft Good Grains bags that look like kind of a farm to table kind of look. Everything looked great. And I thought, I'm just going to rebag them and these and look better. And I did. And it looked great. You know, it wasn't where it's at today, but it was good enough. And now all of a sudden I felt like, okay, I got something.
Yeah.
Every mom, every PTA leader was like, this thing's awesome. This is great. We've been needing a healthier fundraiser. Occasionally you'd have people come up, I don't want any of that healthy junk. And you'd be like, okay, whatever. You know, but by the vast majority, we would leave shows and people would tell us, like, you know, you had more people at your booth than any other table here because they're needed. There isn't anything healthy in the fundraising industry. It's cakes and cookies and chocolate bars and, you know, all the stuff. There's fun runs, but there's no product there. And fun runs are great. But also, it's kind of cool to be able to actually give somebody something when they donate money.
Yeah.
And we had a good, valuable product. And so we thought, well, we have some legs here with this. But we, and looking back, we weren't able to get any initial traction with it. And it was hard because all the signs were pointing that we should.
Yeah.
But then the follow-up was, how long does it take? You know, how many meetings do you have to go through? You have to understand the structure of how that sale goes, which is now, all right, well, now it's going out to events, meeting tons of people, following up with them, getting them into their board meetings, sometimes providing materials and samples and resources for their board meetings, following up again. Sometimes you missed a board meeting, going another month, following up multiple more times, then us deciding, well, maybe we need to hire reps so we can actually stay on top of all these leads that we're getting because we had so many leads. We had thousands of leads. And so you get yourself in this circle of like, oh my gosh, this thing should have already taken off by now.
Yeah.
So again, I'm making these huge mistakes and I'm like, what is going on? And I'm questioning myself and I'm doing all the right things. I've got all the right tools. We tied in HubSpot. We had our CRM. Just because you have software and you have things that doesn't mean it's doing the job.
Yep.
I didn't care if it was written on a scratch piece of paper if the job was done. But I was upset with myself because we were getting further down the road and we weren't getting traction there. That's where we actually did a podcast with a group that was interviewing fundraising companies at one of these events. And a guy from Boosterthon, which is this really cool fundraising company that has like 3,000 schools across the country, really great team in Atlanta. We met with them. They heard us on this podcast. We thought, serial schools, fun runs, let's partner. We put together a great partnership program. And you know what? It just didn't work out. You never know why. Sometimes they introduced it, I guess, for the groups. They're already running a fundraiser. They were trying to do this tie-in with free product. People would get their free stuff, but wouldn't order anything else. So it was kind of all beneficial for them and the people. Didn't really benefit us much. So we tried it. But what happened to us is that now strings our company along for another 6 months to a year, thinking this could be the thing. And yet, because we're a small team, we couldn't have too many concurrent fronts going. We did. We had a few other things we were testing, like putting too much money on some other marketing channels, like where we tried, oh, well, Dave Ramsey or some other things that we thought might be a targeted audience where it just was too expensive and really didn't pan out. So as we go into 2017, 2018, it was a decision of, well, let's go into the e-commerce side of things. You know, we've got this cereal. At that time, we were now working with the cereal company and saying, guys, like, let's make some cereals or let's get this a little more tightened up. So we changed our packaging, got it to kind of where we wanted it. Still not necessarily the whole mix of things that we wanted. There's still better, healthier products or things like you get at Sprouts or Whole Foods. But it wasn't like a game changer cereal. It wasn't something where we knew like, okay, every single item in this product is perfect where we want it. We still defend. I mean, I still love the cereals that we have. They're great. They just aren't to the level that we really wanted to go, which was all organic, all non-GMO, all the best ingredients. But then the problem there is you have to also think price. How much are people willing to pay? So this is where we get to November, December of last year. And I think at kind of a low point, I think for me in life, you know, it was, things are going well at home. I can't, home's great, kids great. You know, they're now 11, they're in their activities and doing theater and all sorts of fun stuff. My wife's great. Other than the guilt that I have that she's now working full time and we're both stressed and tired all the time, which hadn't been a reality for us. That, you know, we've put that stress on ourselves because we're now trying another startup and we have to invest all this into it. So it came about in November that we're like, all right, is this thing really gonna work? You know, we've now given it almost a couple years. Yeah, we've had some kind of higher points where things are looking good, but ultimately we weren't really finding kind of that magic ingredient. And the good part is we've known what it is from the start. We just weren't there yet. So in having kind of our KPI meetings and metrics, we look every week. You know, I mean, that's the foundation. If you're setting up a business where you don't have a good model and you don't know what success actually means, well, you haven't even started right. You know, we could go into a whole other topic about how to do that, but you got to start there. We did, at least. I know we had a good model. We had things that could work, but we were also carving new territory. Nobody had ever sold cereal online. It's kind of like before Harry started. Who sold razors online to ship to homes?
Yeah.
So we tried, you know, these various sample packs. We tried all different ways to kind of get it to the home and get people to reorder. But we couldn't figure out how to get our cost per acquisition lower than, say, $70 on average.
Wow.
So we're like, all right, this isn't going to work. Our lifetime value is kind of up in the air as we've tried different things. So yeah, maybe, maybe not. Nobody's going to buy customers and introduce this through advertising when you're paying $70 to get a new customer. So at that time, I think, you know, we'd met some guys actually at a Cal State Fullerton networking event who were doing some honors marketing program and has an agency called Client Boost out of Orange County.
Okay.
I had actually talked to them a year prior, but as our board, we decided not to go with them because it was too expensive and we didn't have the budget, although we spent a lot more on other things. Retrospect, we should have. And I thought, well, before we close it, let's give them a month. And the cool thing with them, they had recently changed. So instead of being the agency that's like, well, you have to sign for 3, 6 months or a year.
Yeah.
We know our stuff's good. We'll start you on a startup basis. And if it works, we'll grow together. And so we said, guys, there's no reason not to sign the dotted line with you. Let's go. And within a month, we already started seeing things start to spin. Within the second month, it was like 500% growth. And things started to tick.
That's awesome.
By December at that time, I had actually a few people now offering me jobs, which made it even harder. And I had to now look, do I want to take this job? Some of those had to do with moving and being in a different location. And as a kid, as you heard my story, like I was all over the place. Yeah. I did not want to do that to my kids. So I said, you know what? Let's just give it another month and see how it goes. I actually had to turn down the job, still not knowing if this is really going to take off or not. But by January, more and more signs were coming in. We kept growing. And we started to find the trigger that would actually get the cost per acquisition down. We got it down from $70 to $25.
That's incredible.
And just in the last month, we've actually got campaigns down less than, you know, $8, sometimes $5 on campaigns to get new customers. So we now understand our model. We understand kind of what resonates and what's really helping people. We worked on products and really positioning them correctly to the right targets. There's a lot of little learnings in kind of how we're doing that through e-commerce and then learning on, you know, simple things like how do we optimize shipping and fulfillment and all the stuff that we've had to do internally, which eats up your day. But we had to stop trying to do all the other stuff and really just hone in on the basics. The model has to work. We have to have a CPA that works. We have to have a lifetime value that works. And ultimately, we have to have happy customers. And so we've really always honed in on customer service. We take care of every customer. We want to make sure they're all happy. We'll see a comment on a Facebook ad. We'll message them privately, completely refund them, send them an extra box of goodies and say, we're really sorry, but we hope you love us still and share this stuff with your friends and neighbors. Everybody's always shocked, but that's the type of company that we are and we want to be. And
I love hearing about the success, especially how recent it is and how you were contemplating, do we even go forward at the end of last year? But coming off of the other trials in your journey, this sounds like it has some potential to it, but is there part... Are you completely over? Have you brushed off the past completely and it doesn't cross your mind? Or does it occasionally perk up and you start questioning, can I actually do this?
Yeah, I can't tell you how many nights I laid in bed at 1 a.m. scrolling down LinkedIn jobs saying like, is it time?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really personal. I haven't shared that with hardly anybody. Yeah. Like, you know, and
but it's real.
Just, I mean, it's so real. Like it hits me hard right now just thinking about it because it's still reality. You know, in the startup life, it's, you never know until it's finally there. Like I remember in the agency, like thinking one day, like, yeah, this is dialed in now. Because I remember I left and I was on a vacation with the family and I came back and then I was working for a couple months and I looked and I'm like, wait, who made this TV spot? It's really cool. And our team was like, oh yeah, we made it. We did that last month. And I'm like, because when you first start, you're in everything.
Yeah.
And at that point, I remember thinking like, I didn't even touch that. I wasn't even around. I didn't even know they did it. And they filmed a whole TV spot. And I was like, it was amazing. And I'm like, how cool is that?
Yeah.
You know? And so that's when you realize that you've set up the foundation of something that can grow beyond you.
Yeah.
And yeah, I would have loved for Good Grains to take off faster. I think it's a great concept. I think we have a great heart for what we're doing. We want to bring health and happiness to our communities. Mm-hmm. We only want to work with companies that really believe and care about their products and really are trying harder to make better products because there's so many really just crappy products out there.
Yeah.
And they're not good for you. And they are causing all sorts of health problems. And so we want to put ourselves to the point of let's make that better. Let's become a solution, not just somebody trying to hawk more products online.
Yeah.
So I love being able to have a chance to do that. And I hope we can make it work. I
mean, that's awesome.
That's where we're at.
That's awesome. So two questions that I ask all of my founders. The first one is about gratitude of the journey, because I do believe that if we forget all the people that contributed to where we are today, we begin to think we did it by ourselves, and therefore we will inevitably lead to our failure as we ride solo. So when you look back at your journey, who do you look back with just immense gratitude for the role they have played in your story?
The first thing for the record is my faith. You know, I've leaned on that throughout this whole journey, and just God carving my path and seeing the signs in the right time, in the right place, and being able to trust that has been number one. Number two is my wife and the support of my family, and that they've been there every step of the way. And she's been such a support, even through the hardest of times. And she knows that we're doing this because we want to do something that matters more and not just show up. And we're not doing it for great wealth. We're doing it because we want to do something that matters. We want to show that's important for our kids too. Third is our business relationships. My mentor, who runs a cereal company and has been there every step of the way for our family, his family, who was at our house almost every week taking care of our kids when we had the triplets, can't be more grateful for that. Like, they're awesome. So incredible. And our team, just, this is always a team effort. It's not about the owner. It's like, without a great team, culture is so much fun to build. I love doing that. And it's just done because we just enjoy doing what we do, and we work with cool people who also enjoy doing what they do.
Yeah.
And they all put in really great effort. Even though we're a small team, we've got really great people. And I hope that continues to build. And I've seen that in the past with previous companies. It's so much fun when you get that right. And so I'm so grateful for them and all the hard work that they've done. None of this would have been possible. Like, I didn't code any of eGood. It was some idea. I loved coming up with the ideas. I loved having walls covered with all the pages and how we were going to make that happen. And I still love the idea of it. You know, it just, we never made it work. But the developers who spent so many countless hours writing hundreds of thousands of lines of code, taking on challenges to make things happen that I would just be like, yeah, you can do this. Like, that's not possible. And yet we'd figure it out. Like, it was the team who did all that, you know? And so, and the same here, and shipping out the boxes every day, making sure our customers are happy. I'm not on the phone. Ellen is, you know, Ellen's answering the phone every day and making sure everybody's super happy. She's super sweet. Like, I'm so grateful for them that they believe in this journey enough to say, let's make it happen. And I think when you take care of your team, you take care of your partners, you take care of those people that are all there to make that happen. And if you have faith and you lean on that, it's going to be good. The lesson I've learned as I get older, I'm now over 40, which I don't even know what happened. I felt like I was 30 yesterday, is it's okay to be in the journey.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's going to be up. It's going to be down. Yeah. And it's going to be that way your whole life. And if every time that you're down, all you're doing is stressed and worried about being up again, you're going to lose out on more than half your life.
Yeah.
Because those up points are fewer than, I mean, some people are just funny. They just seem to always be up. That's probably not the case.
No.
You know, I think we live in a society where we look at everybody else and their best view on Facebook and social media, and you just see the good.
Yeah.
But that's not where you learn. Those low moments are sometimes where you learn the biggest lessons. And through that, I've had to learn to keep the priorities straight, to be with the family, to work hard when I'm working, to not waste time when I'm here and doing what really matters. But ultimately, if we keep doing the right things, it's going to pan out one way or the other. And if it doesn't, you know what? Maybe there's something else. But right now, this is where I'm at, and I'm going to give it everything I have because I'm excited about what we're doing, and I see it going. I can see the path. We have a few more things to dial in. We could turn this up right now. We have already told our board that, hey, we hit this metric, and this is where we turn up the advertising and really get it running. So this could be a company 20 times the size it is today, but I'm not going to make the same mistake I made with the last company and ask for funding when we weren't ready. And now we have a fulfillment center, 3,000 square feet. We ship out boxes ordered by 12 o'clock on time every single day. If there's any problem, we take care of it right away. So we're not going to launch a company where you're stuck trying to call customer service and they won't answer the phone. We have everything dialed in now, and we're ready to scale this. And we see that lifetime value calc go for our customers to where we know, hey, spending $20 to get a new customer totally makes business sense. I think it already does. I'm just giving a little more time. I just want to make sure. And if it does, we're going to be cranking this up pretty soon. And then we can invest more in. We already have awesome plans for some cool new products that were in the works.
I can't say
anything about it yet,
but
I'm super excited about some of those because those are products we really have been wanting to launch for the last 2 years, but we're doing the R&D now. We're getting things together that we know are going to be more beneficial for people and help them have a better day. And we want to find more companies to work with that have that same mission. Like Mirror. Mirror is a mug company, so they brand the mugs that we sell online. And they're incredible mugs, and they give back for every single one. There's a give back code. I originally found it in REI and had this camp cup and was like, this is my favorite mug I ever had. So what we did is we took our favorite mug and said, let's brand it. That's the one we're going to offer you. And so that's the type of stuff that we do, is we want to find the best quality product at the best price that actually works the best, and then we're going to offer that to you.
That's
so
awesome.
We can make that model work. That's what we're doing.
So as our last question, you know, this entire podcast is, it's mentorship. It's time to hear the story of someone who's farther down the road, who's been through some ups and some downs and come through on the backside of that. And you have a mentor in your life, so you understand the power of mentorship. And while we've been talking to the masses for this next 2 minutes, I'd like you to talk to just one listener specifically. And again, whether that's the listener who's been punched in the gut, or that listener who is in the mix of it and is just really frustrated, whoever it is you want to talk to, I just want to give you a minute or two to just speak some hope into that one person.
I'd like to talk to the business owner who has felt punched in the gut, who has tried everything, but lately it just doesn't seem to be working. It's not you. I think you got to get out of your own head for a second. And one of the best things that you can do is take a step back and also talk to your friends and other people around you to really get a sense of what you're doing. Is it truly adding value? Do you really have a good solution? And don't just get caught up in what you're trying to do, but really hone in on that core concept. And I think for us, it's been a shift for us in the last few months that I think if you can look at your business and understand, does it really matter? Is it really making a difference? Do people really care? And can you understand that within the matter of a few seconds? Because people make decisions pretty quickly, then you might have something. But also come to the reality, I think, where we were at, which is maybe you don't. And I've been through both of those scenarios, and it's super hard to acknowledge when you don't. But it's so freeing as well, because when I finally did shut down E-Good and it was time, oh my gosh, the weight that came off my shoulders at that time, even though it felt a failure, I've had to take that as a learning lesson. And I think if you look at your business and you can make a decision, just don't get stuck out of fear. Don't let that fear just stop you in your tracks, because that's the worst thing you can do. You could just sit there and you can just spin and spin and spin, or you'll keep trying different things to solve the problem. If it's not working, it's not working. If you've tried everything and it's not working, maybe it's time. But stop for a minute, talk to some other people, truly listen, because a lot of times I think as entrepreneurs, we got all the answers. So sometimes we always have a good comeback, but do we really? Is it really there? And do you really have something? And then you got to choose, is this entrepreneurial path really right for you, or is it not? And I think a lot of times it is. Maybe you haven't found it quite right yet. Maybe you need to hone in on what it is. And if you're doing it for the wrong reasons and you're doing it just to make more money, well, it's probably never going to work out. I've never really seen that work that well. But when I see people who are so passionate about what they do, that seems to always work, some way or the other, or at least it gets them to the right place and the right path.
Now that you've heard Zach's startup story, I hope you can understand why I am such a fan of Zach. I hope for tremendous success for him and for the Good Grains team. During his journey, he shared with us how volatile the entrepreneurial journey is. He laid it out there how important family support is, and he shared with us how critical it is to be incredibly honest with yourself about your ideas and your venture. More importantly, he shared with us that we must detach our identity and personal value from our business. I hope you found tremendous value in hearing Zach's startup story, and I hope you will show up in a huge way for Zach and Good Grains. There are a few ways you can do this. First, visit goodgrains.com and give some of their products a try. I can tell you again, my family loves their granola, especially my kids. And if you have anyone in your family that's diabetic, they have an entire cereal line tailored for diabetics. So visit goodgrains.com to try something new. The second way you can support Zach and Good Grains is to follow their social media accounts. Awareness is the number one challenge for startups because there's so much noise out there. On Facebook, you can find Good Grains at Good Grains Club. On Instagram, it's just Good Grains. We'll have all their links in our show notes, so please follow them on the social channels and visit goodgrains.com to support Zach and the Good Grains team. I say it time and time again because I believe it. Entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs, so let's support Zach and the entire Good Grains team. Now, for my personal ask. The Startup Story community has been so incredible with sharing our podcast with others, but we have more stories to tell and more people to reach. We are a startup, and the most powerful way you can support the Startup Story podcast is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at thestartupstory.co. Share the Startup Story on your social media, either with a link or a screenshot, make sure you tag or mention us at thestartupstory.co so we can see your help and say thank you for it. And lastly, share the podcast on your LinkedIn profile. The Startup Story is for entrepreneurs, so please do not underestimate the power of sharing the Startup Story on your LinkedIn profile so other entrepreneurs can discover us. In fact, most people struggle to share good content on LinkedIn anyways, so if you want to support the Startup Story, then search for the Startup Story company page, follow us, and share our posts to help encourage other founders and spread the word about the podcast. Every single founder has a story, and the Startup Stories we bring to you every week can encourage and inspire another founder. It might just be what they needed to hear to keep moving forward on their dreams. I look forward to sharing these stories every Tuesday with hopes to inspire you to start your story.